shug, 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 shug,
shug. Hello and welcome back to the Wizard Staff. I'm your host Guy.
And I'm Blake.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We drink and swear, you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when you're talking about children's card games. And tonight we are kind of getting all spooky, because it is time for Halloween, aka Innistrad.
Time to get spooky.
Oh yeah. We are returning again, so this is our third visit to Innistrad, which is kind of the gothic horror plane that exists in Magic. So this is where we'll see a bunch of werewolves, zombies, vampires, spirits, and humans, because of course you have to have a good battle between the supernatural and the humans.
Yep, no more Eldrazi. I think in the past formats, the Eldrazi, like, were like, alright, the audience is done with Eldrazi. Let's really focus on, like, the core of Innistrad, which is what you just mentioned, all this gothic horror.
Yeah. There was the set last time, Eldritch Moon, which was kind of like Lovecraftian horror, and yes. So that's how they used the Eldrazi to kind of, like, make these squid, werewolf creatures, and players weren't the biggest fans of them. I think they just wanted a straightforward Innistrad, and that's what we get.
Yeah, that being said, I think Innistrad is widely regarded as one of the most popular, like, sets and planes amongst the player base.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so there was kind of a lot of pressure on this set for the designers, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, though, we are getting a second Innistrad set back-to-back. This is kind of the first time they've done this in a while, where we have kind of like a two-parter. So this is the first one, Innistrad Midnight Hunt, which more so focuses on werewolves. There's a ton of werewolf tribal support. I mean, there's werewolf tribal support, of course, but it's not like overtly werewolf. Like, you still see all the things that make up Innistrad. And then when we do Crimson Vow, which is the next one, it'll kind of switch a bit. We'll have a little bit of werewolves, but a little more of the vampires.
Yes, but for now, we're talking about this, like, quote-unquote first half. And we are going to try to do this whole set in one episode. It might end up being in two. We'll see as we go along, but Guy and I are trying to get back to the point where we are able to review an entire set in just one episode.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess without further ado, what are we drinking?
So quick story. I'm on vacation and I have a vertical state driver's license, and normally they're horizontal. So I always, like, get weird looks at my ID, and it often takes an extra. But at this state that I'm in, there's a very high DUI rate, and their policy is just, like, do not serve alcohol if the person has a vertical. So some places have been cool. The last couple places I've gone to, each one in a row has said, like, no, we're not going to give you alcohol, even though it's a perfectly legal ID. And I'm like, oh, right, whatever. I care, but I don't care enough to, like, be that annoyed by it. So this time, I am going to be sober.
Nice. For me, I'm just drinking a simple coffee with some Baileys. Yeah, I just had a headache this morning, and I was like, I don't need to do anything, like, crazy for this episode. I am very vastly underprepared because of the amount of cards that have just come out this year, and I'm just like, my God.
Yeah, this is going to be a chill episode. Yeah. I mean, every episode is chill, but, like, you know.
Alright, so why don't we just dive into kind of a quick background. Innistrad Midnight Hunt is the 89th Magic expansion. It will be released on September 24th, which actually, at the time of recording, was just yesterday. And it is paired with Innistrad Crimson Vow, which will release 2 months later in November.
Yeah.
For the storyline, R&D wanted to reset Innistrad back to the original 2011 version, where horror monsters from classic horror films are menacing humanity, and who's going to protect them? Well, originally, Avacyn was our protector in the first Innistrad block, but in the second one, she died. And now, without Avacyn's protection, the humans have to turn to what they call older and perhaps darker forms of magic to stave off the onslaught of the different monsters, particularly the werewolves, which is, you know, why we're focusing them on them this set. The story begins, ripped right from the worries of Innistrad's populace, a night that may never end. Ooh, spooky. With the sun rising later and setting sooner each day, they turn to the hope of the Harvesttide Festival and a ritual with warlocks to maintain the balance. Despite plenty of werewolves and other denizens of the night, there's strength and hope for the humans gathered deep in the woods of the Kessig countryside.
Exactly, and it's like each of those like creature types that you just mentioned kind of has like a corresponding like mechanic and theme. So like, for example, we have Daybound and Nightbound, which is like the mechanic for the werewolves. Because yeah, werewolves are back. It was like, it's a big deal. It's like the return of transforming double-faced cards, and they have this Daybound, Nightbound mechanic. It's kind of complicated. I don't want to get into all the details, but basically it's slightly better than it originally was years ago. And it is a bit complicated, so like if you're the person who has the Daybound, Nightbound, keep track of it, because it's kind of annoying when like you as the other person have to keep track, and it's like
it is not something that just starts at the beginning of the game. It does have to be brought into the game by a card that has the Daybound or Night mechanic, but essentially it just means that when it is day, cards that have Daybound will enter in on the Daybound side. And then when it is night, they will enter in on the Nightbound side. In order for it to become day, a player needs to cast two spells during their own turn. In order for it to become night, a player has to cast no spells during their own turn. And that can be kind of hard in EDH when, you know, you have four people kind of deciding the game.
Yeah. Next up we have Coven, which is tied to the humans of this set. And it's kind of a new ability that is related to whether or not you control three or more creatures with different powers, and if you do, then a certain ability happens. There's also Decayed, which is tied to the zombies of this plane. Like, these creature tokens kind of got nerfed in the sense that now these decayed creature tokens can't block, and when they do attack, they are sacrificed at the end of the turn. So they're like kind of really low powered down creature tokens in a way. But they're still helpful in a lot of situations.
The one upside I know that they brought in Decayed is because they wanted to be able to make more zombies or more tokens just for a lower cost. So they had to give the tokens a drawback. So that's why... Yeah, so they were trying to like bump up the zombies, but at the same time, they were like, if we're going to do that, they need to have kind of a drawback. And I think it works, especially because it's a little more flavorful, if you think about it. Like, zombies that are decayed, I mean, all zombies are decayed. Like, they should be relatively easy to get rid of, especially if they attack. Like, I feel like, you know, a zombie's going to hit you once, and then it's down for the count.
That actually makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that. Next up, we have Disturb, and Guy's favorite, Spirits. And it's just a keyword ability that allows you to cast these cards transformed from your graveyard. So they go to your graveyard and you can cast them for their Disturb ability and they come back as something else. And then...
Pseudo flashback for creatures.
And Guy, let me know, but I don't think there's a mechanic tied to vampires. We have vampires in this set.
No, I'm sure they're saving that for Crimson Vow.
Okay, yeah, and then we also got like flashback and investigate, which longtime players know, like... Yeah, I'm not going to go over that. All right, you want to start talking about the new commanders of the set?
Yes, and we're doing something a little different with this one to try and help, you know, condense the amount of cards that we talk about. But we're going into this nothing to say commanders. These are cards that really not worth the time. So we're just going to kind of read off this list real quick, and then we're going to say goodbye. So we have Jadar, Ghoul Caller of Nephalia. It's a legendary creature human wizard. And pretty much, if you control no creatures with Decayed, you just create a black zombie creature with Decayed. So put it in a zombie deck, that's it.
Yeah, at the beginning of your end step, so it makes like one token per turn, basically, per rotation. Yeah.
Yep, see how easy that was? Boom, done. Next we have... Oh, Blake, why don't you go over this one.
Yeah, so this one's two-faced. It is Denik, Pious Apprentice, white, and a blue legendary creature, human soldier. 2/3, it has lifelink, and cards in your graveyard can't be targets of spells or abilities. That's not all that relevant in Commander. Then it has Disturb for 2 white-blue, so the backside. It turns into, like, this other creature that has flying, and it says whenever one or more creature cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, investigate. This ability triggers only once each turn. And then most Disturb cards have this line of text that says, like, if it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So it's this creature that says, like, oh, put creatures in your graveyard and you investigate, but it's limited to only, like, once per turn. So it's just, like, neither side is really doing much of anything. It doesn't really fit into any sort of deck as a commander or in the 99, so we're just moving on.
Yep, and then we got Eloise, Nefalia Sleuth. 3 black-blue. And this is one of the ones that comes in the commander precon decks. It's a legendary creature, human rogue. Whenever another creature you control dies, investigate. And whenever you sacrifice a token, surveil 1. So, yeah, that's kind of it. Not really sure what you want to do. Like, you can take advantage of the creatures dying just because it's not limited to once per turn, but I don't know, it doesn't seem that interesting.
Yeah, especially not, like, limited in, like, black and blue, which are pretty, like, control-y colors. It's like, okay, you can make a bunch of creature tokens and, like, do a bunch of surveil triggers and a bunch of investigation triggers, but then what do you do from there? Just, like, generic blue-black stuff? Like, weird aristocrats things restricted to blue and black? It's whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, Gorex, the Tomb Shell, 6 black-black, so, like, 8 mana to cast this thing, and it's a 4/4, like, zombie turtle. And then, like, in addition to casting this, like, you may exile any number of creature cards from your graveyard. The spell costs 2 less to cast for each card exiled this way, so, like, you could potentially get it all the way down to, like, only black-black. You get rid of 3 creatures in your graveyard, so that's kind of nice. It has Death Touch, okay. And then, when it attacks or dies, choose a card at random, exile with Gorex, and put that card into its owner's hand. It's like, okay, whatever. Like, you got through all this trouble of, like, getting this thing out, attacking with it, or it dies, or whatever, and you're just putting a random card back into, like, an owner's hand. That's not really anything of anything. Okay, moving on.
Kerbis. Harvest Celebrant. X, green, legendary creature, tree folk. When it enters the battlefield, it comes in with a number of +1/+1 counters on it, equal to the amount of mana spent. Then you can remove one of those counters and prevent all damage that would be dealt this turn to another target creature with a +1/+1 counter on it. So, Pseudo Fog Tribal and +1/+1 counters matters deck. I think that this does see probably a place in the 99 for a deck we're going to probably talk about here in a little bit, but for now, that's it.
Yeah, like, maybe in the 99 of, like, a weird intersection between fog and +1/+1 synergies. Like, that's, like, it. Yeah. Whatever. And then there's the last one in this category, which is Kyler, Sigardian Emissary, 3 green-white, human cleric 2/2. Whenever another human enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on this card, and then other humans you control get +1/+1 for each counter on Kyler. And so you may be thinking, like, hey, Blake, this is, like, kind of a decent human tribal commander, and I'm like, yes, that's true, but as we're going to talk about later in this set, there are just better human tribal commanders that we're going to talk about in a few minutes that are also, like, white and green, just kind of arguably do that sort of role better. So I think this is just, like, instantly obsoleted. Like, maybe this goes in the 99 of those ones, but yeah, whatever.
I didn't even realize it's a mythic. Oh, it's a mythic. Wait, it's a mythic because it comes in the precon deck. Never mind. I thought this was, like, a mythic that I could open up in the boosters, and I was like, oh my god, I'd be so mad. But it has a different set symbol. Immediately, yep. Caught myself before I made a mistake.
Nice. Alright, now we're going to get into the cards that we actually feel like we have at least a little bit of substance to talk about, or, like, there's some, like, something interesting about them that can't just be summarized in, like, one sentence. Alright, so we're gonna go in Wooburg order, meaning white, blue, black, red, green, and multicolor and colorless. So that's kind of the order we go in. So, Guy, do you want to start us off?
Alright. So we got Adeline, Resplendent Cathar, one white-white, so three mana total, pretty good. Legendary creature, human knight, vigilance. Adeline's power is equal to the number of creatures you control. Whenever you attack, for each opponent, create a 1-1 white human creature token that's tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker they control. So, kind of like white human weenies?
Yeah, in a way. I just have seen a little bit of talk about this card in the sense that, like, alright, how do we make this the best it can possibly be? Like, let's include a bunch of rule of law effects. Let's include anointed procession so that we get, like, twice as many, like, tokens. And, like, let's add divine visitation and, like, make the tokens really big. And, like, let's include Cathar's Crusade and, like, make the tokens really big even more. And, like, people are talking about, like, kind of making it, like, a mono-white Staxi deck. And I'm like, you know, it's a valiant effort, but I don't think it's quite there. It is pretty nice in the sense that it's, like, three mana, and it can make three tokens per when you swing. So, in theory, you're making three tokens per rotation, which is nice. Rate of token generation. And, like, it does synergize with another, like, older mono-white commander, like Darion, King of Jeldor, where it cares about, like humans and soldiers, I think. So that's kind of nice. And, like, I know it's been compared to, like, what's it called? Like, Brimaz, like this lion that kind of has the same casting cost and stats and token generation. So there's kind of some interesting things about it, but, like, I don't see either of those commanders, which are somewhat similar to this. I just don't think it quite makes... I don't expect to see it a whole bunch.
Yeah, it seems fine. Another card that I think might be good is, like, not the Odrek that gives all the stats, but the Odrek that... the second Odrek, I believe, where when you attack, if there are three other creatures attacking, you choose which creatures block and how creatures block, because you're always going to then be able to choose how that works, because you're almost always going to be creating at least three creatures that are attacking. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Odrek, Master Tactician. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that one.
All right. Going to move on to blue. Lier, Disciple of the Drowned, 3 blue-blue, legendary creature, human wizard, 3/4. Spells can't be countered, and each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard has flashback. The flashback cost is equal to that card's mana cost. So, I want to clarify that first line of text, spells can't be countered, that applies to your opponents as well. So, like, their spells can't be countered, which is kind of strange, because if you are playing this as the commander, that means you're a mono-blue deck. You often, as a mono-blue deck, rely on counterspells as your main form of interaction due to your restrictions of the color pie. So it seems almost counterintuitive in that sense. So it confuses me. That second bit of text, though, is kind of nice, where it's like, your instances and sorceries have flashback. And that's pretty powerful, because it kind of reminds me of, like, Draenu Lich Lord, which was one of, like, the powerhouses, like, at the early days of EDH. And I think that role has kind of now kind of been circumvented. Like, you know, you can still play, like, High Tide to Frantic Search and Turnabout and have this, like, mono-blue stormy turn, but I think that's kind of been the role of, like, Jace Friend's Prodigy and, most recently, Orvar. Orvar was pretty popular as a mono-blue, like, storm deck. And I don't think this quite surpasses either of those or is wanted in the 99 of those decks. So I don't actually think this is going to be played much. And, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one part that I didn't even think about until you kind of said spells can't be countered, and that doesn't just apply to... that applies to you as well. It's not just...
correct.
Your opponents, so...
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is symmetrical. Yeah.
Interesting. I think Alex, our friend who's been on the podcast, has said that he has a kind of an interest in maybe building this.
Yeah. I mean, go for it, yeah. If you're interested in it, anyone listening, if you're interested in a card, like, by all means, go for it. More power to you.
Right. And I know we just, you know, said six of these commanders are pretty much garbage, but
we've been pretty negative so far. We're just like,
there's just so many legendary creatures nowadays, and like, we'll probably talk about this in our end of the year review, but like, it's really hard to like now just think of like every single possible thing that you could do with every single commander. Like, I'm sure there's things that, you know, we'll come across that we will never even think about, but yeah. Okay, let's go on to black. Gissa, Glorious Resurrector. 2 black-black legendary creature human wizard. If a creature an opponent controls would die, exile it instead. So, pseudo Leyline of the Voidy. At the beginning of your upkeep, put all creature cards exiled with Gissa, Glorious Resurrector onto the battlefield under your control. They gain decayed. Alright, that's not bad. Especially because, like, there's a good chance something will die. It doesn't have to be necessarily from how you kill it, but, like, if an opponent were to kill it, you can then get that back onto your side of the battlefield at the beginning of your upkeep. So, you can let your opponents try and do a lot of the work for you, is kind of what I'm getting at here. I didn't really prepare for this podcast all that much. I had Blake do a lot of the work for me. That's kind of the goal for this deck that I think you should have, is let your opponents do the work for you and then like reap from the benefits.
I'm kind of torn because personally I don't really like to rely on my opponent's cards to generate me value that I can use to like win me the game, but this is just so efficient at like using your opponent's resources, and like it kind of seems like on average, we are kind of at the point where, like, each deck usually has enough value creatures of some kind where, like, you can just, like, use the value of those cards to win. So, I'm kind of okay on this card. One thing that interests me about this card is it kind of seems to be a continuation of design in which the WotC is exploring with black, in the sense that, like, it's having things being exiled, and then, like, these black cards are bringing them back from exile under your control. It's like Turgrid, sort of. It's like Dothy Voidwalker, an opposition agent, all pretty powerful cards in their own respects. And now I see Gissa as like a continuation of that trend. And so I'm really, I think it's a really powerful thing that they're giving black as a tool. And I'm really interested going forward to see like if that continues and what they could possibly give black.
Yeah, for sure. Some cards you could also include here are like the Fleshbag Marauder Playcrafter package, where, you know, you have them enter the battlefield and then, you know, everyone has to have something die, and then that way you can bring them all back next turn, and then you can, if you do get to bring back like Fleshbag Marauder or Playcrafter, you kind of then set up again for on your next upkeep your opponent's already then had something else kind of die, you know?
Oh yeah, there's no shortage of ways to make your opponent's creatures die in mono black. You have an abundance of ways.
Yeah, I think the key is just trying to protect Gissa.
Sure. Alright, we can move on to the next commander here, which is... Well, I'm actually going to read this card differently. I'm going to read the back side, and then I'm going to read the front side. I think it'll make more sense if I do that, okay? So the back side is like the side you want to get to, which is Ormondal, the Corruptor. It's a legendary creature, Demon 6/6, with Flying, Trample, Lifelink, and an activated ability that says sacrifice another creature, draw a card. So that alone, like, hey, that's pretty damn good. Like, that's really efficient line of converting one resource to another. Like, sacrifice another creature, draw a card. That's pretty powerful. Just like a free sac outlet, converting that into straight up card advantage. Wow, that's really strong. That'd be great. How do we get to this back side of the card? Well, we got to first look at the front side. It is Jaren, Corrupted Bishop, 2 and a black, legendary creature, human cleric, 2/3. When it enters the battlefield or another non-token human you control dies, you lose 1 life and create a 1/1 white human creature token. Activate ability of 2, target human you control gains lifelink until end of turn. And then the most important line of text here on the front says, at the beginning of your end step, if you have exactly 13 life, you may pay 4 black-black if you do transform onto the backside that we want. So, the backside is so awesome, but I don't think we're, like, ever going to get there because we got to transform it from the front. And, like, the restriction of like having exactly 13 life and then paying 6 mana to transform it, that's just like one hurdle too many, I think, for the average player. Do you agree?
I agree. I think it's kind of tough because typically, so first you start at 40 life and you need to get down to 13 with him on the field to then flip him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think getting to a specific number in black with life is that hard, because you have cards like Necropotence. There's another card that we'll talk about in a little bit where you can pretty much like pay one life, and like that's not too hard to do, like get specifically to 13. But then you're getting to 13 and you're at a pretty low life total with three other opponents. So yeah, it's kind of tough.
Yeah, as good as the backside is, unless you're able to like immediately win after. Well, that's the thing, like, even if you flip this, you're at the beginning of your end step, you're at 13 life, and, like, you just paid at least 6 mana to, like, flip into this. So, like, there's, the designers were very clever, they purposefully, like, were like, alright, there's, like, it's really, really, really hard to break this once you flip it to the backside, because the timing of when this flips, you can't immediately take advantage of it very well, I should say.
Yeah, I think the one thing, hopefully you've made a bunch of humans, but also, you know, the way that I describe getting to 13 life, you're probably not getting a bunch of humans, because you then want a lot of humans on the field once you have Ormondal the Corruptor to then just like sack them all to like draw a bunch of cards. It's strong, but it's not like, it's backbreaking to get to.
Yeah, that's the real shame. It's like, oh my god, like this Ormondal, because we've had another Ormondal, Profane Prince before, on like the flip side of like Westville Abbey. This one is actually good for EDH, and it's like, oh, I want it, but then I got to deal with Jaren and his like stupid face. Like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just stick with like Vilas or like Krov or like Midnight Reaper if you want like draw triggers from sacrificing shit. I don't know. A little bit sad. But you know what's even sadder, guy?
Yeah, no mono red creatures. I think we're gonna get a few in Crimson Vow. I feel like
with vampires, totally, because vampires are black, red, white.
Yeah, and I know werewolves are red green, but I just have a stronger feeling that red plays more into the vampires, and that's where we're gonna see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then we're just immediately gonna move on to green, which is Seraph, the Viper's Fang, 2 green-green, legendary creature, human warlock. Other tapped creatures you control have Death Touch. Other untapped creatures you control have Hexproof. And then for 1 mana tap, untap another target creature or land you control. So, Death Touch Tribal, is it finally becoming a thing?
Yeah, that's what interests me about this card. I think it is becoming a thing, because we have this card, which in a sense gives like your attacking creatures death touch. Like, we have Boa of Nylea from way back in the day. We somewhat recently got Orin Frost Fang, which is like probably the most well known of like this sort of like death touch tribal, quote unquote. And like, we also somewhat recently got Finn the Fang Bear, which gave like your death touch infect, which made Death Touch even more
quick.
Yeah, so in a way, I think it was poison technically.
Yeah.
So technically poison, but it just made that line of winning with Death Touch Tribal even more efficient. And then, just kind of on a side note, in the Commander, one of the Commander decks, there was this new card like Somber Walled Beastmaster, which is like a 7 mana creature, but at the bottom of it, it says creature tokens you control have Death Touch. So again, it's like, wow, like more Death Touch support. I just think that's like a trend that we'll probably see going forward. So I'm kind of thinking about maybe picking this card up in the chance that like Death Touch Tribal, quote unquote, actually does become like, have a critical mass of cards where you can really make an effective deck out of it in the future here. In addition, like, it's not just the Death Touch, it's also the fact that it grants your untapped creatures Hexproof, which is like really strong in a creature-centric deck, which this will be. In a way, giving like all of your creatures pseudo-Hexproof, like for 4 mana, that's like, wow, that's really efficient. And then like that, and then like the last line of text is like also really strong, just one tap, untap another target creature or land you control. It's kind of the fact that it says another target creature so that it can't target itself to like be busted as hell is kind of sad, but it makes sense because, you know, otherwise it would be busted as hell. But you can still do like dumb stuff like, you know, untap your Gaia's Cradle or some other really powerful land. We have some powerful lands in EDH. And so I'm pretty impressed with this card.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it fits right into Green's agenda with just wanting to cast big creatures, deal a bunch of damage. And, I mean, either you deal a bunch of damage or, you know, you're just going to lose all your creatures. Or your opponents are just going to lose all their creatures because, you know, most of your stuff's going to have Death Touch. And then they'll just lose it. So, not bad. Yeah, I like it.
Yes. All right. So we're going to move into the multicolor commanders, and oh boy, what a start. All right. So we have Sigarda, Champion of Light, 1GW legendary creature angel, 4/4 with flying and trample, and humans you control get +1/+1. So it's like an anthem effect for your humans. Cool. And then we have Coven. Remember Coven? We talked about it at the beginning. Whenever Sigarda attacks, if you control 3 or more creatures with different power, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a human card from among them, put it into your hand, put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So, so long-time listeners may know that I have like a Sigarda Host of Herons deck. It's probably one of my most played decks and arguably one of my favorites. So there's Sigarda Host of Herons. There was also Sigarda Heron's Grace, which is like less played, but it's also another Sigarda commander, and now this is like the third Sigarda commander we have, and it very clearly asks you to play like human tribal, similar to the Heron's Grace one, which also asked you to play human tribal. And interestingly enough, if you search up all the humans in Magic, there actually are quite a lot for that tribe, but for most of history, like, they haven't been that good. I actually think that this set gave human tribal, like, a real boost. It actually gave, like, a pretty good amount of decent human cards. And so, I think it's a little bit better. I still don't think it's going to be all that popular. I'm probably, as much as I love Sigarda, I don't think I'll build this deck.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that you love those specific cards. It's not like I love every single version of
Avacyn.
Well, that's actually a better comparison, because I only love the big one, 5WW.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care for the other two. So, I understand where you're coming from, for sure. To me, it seems like, I don't know if you'll agree with this necessarily, but I almost feel like you could build the green-white human tribals deck, and then just kind of like, almost inadvertently swap Sigarda and Heron's Grace, or this one, and you just can just kind of choose which Sigarda you want to this one doesn't feel different enough from the other one, where I'm like,
Champion of Light, I'd argue, is slightly better in the sense that like the Coven ability is giving you card advantage, and she's also giving you an anthem effect in the +1/+1, which I'd argue is better than Heron's Grace, which really just gave you and your humans protection. Like, I think one of the most powerful things I saw out of the Heron's Grace is like a weird like Selesnya Hermit Druid strategy, which was really convoluted, and like, because like Hermit Druid is like a human, and like that Heron's Grace can't protect the Hermit Druid, but it's like, you know, Hermit Druid is mostly played in like CDH pods generally speaking, so it's just weird. So Champion of Light, I do think they're slightly different in terms of like how they support human tribal. I still don't think I'm going to play it, and I don't think I'm going to see it played against me that much. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Let's move on to Lisa, Forgotten Archangel. So, if you remember, we did get Lisa the first card recently in Commander Legends. It was kind of the, hey, look, it's the missing sister from the group of Avacyn, Bruna, Sigarda, and Gisela. Lisa was the white-black one, and she died long time ago, but looks like she's back. Not really sure how, I didn't look into the story, but let's read her. We got Lisa, Forgotten Archangel, 2 white-white-black, legendary creature angel, flying lifelink. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, return that card to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. If it a creature an opponent controls would die, exile it instead. So, it's okay. I think, like, pseudo do some stacks type things. We've gotten some recent cards like Douthi Voidwalker, Priest of Fell Rites. These are cards that, like, you would sacrifice them to get, like, a very strong effect. But then, because you sacrificed them, they would essentially die. And then you're able to return them to your hand at the beginning of your next end step. So you can essentially reuse them.
Yeah, you can always reuse a certain, like, type of creature. I'm kind of curious, Guy, because I've heard people try to figure out, like, what they want to do with this commander. And I've heard, like, Fleshbag Marauder effects, where, like, you're constantly able to Fleshbag Marauder and have them sacrifice their creatures over and over. I've also heard people talk about, like, Shadowborn Apostle deck, the one where, like, most of your deck is just Shadowborn Apostles and get out the occasional, like, demon, because you can get back the Apostle with her trigger. I don't know what you think of those ideas.
I think they're fine. This one, I think, doesn't necessarily have a clear direction you can go in, but you could kind of almost insert it into a lot of, like, white-black type effects, and it will help boost it. Especially, I guess, like, not even, it doesn't even have to be the commander. I think that this is going to be a pretty good 99 for those kind of decks as well. Yeah, so I think just benefiting from cards that aristocrats, like, they'll die to, like, bring it back is a good idea. The Shadowborn Apostles idea, you know, yeah, I think you still want to run Athreos as your commander for that deck, but this would be a good card in the 99 for that.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, yeah. I know that you run, like, Lisa Shroud of Dusk, the very first one, so I was kind of curious on what your opinions were of the second one. Yeah.
I'm definitely bought a couple of these to, like, alter and then probably put into my current Liesa deck, but yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right, we will move on to, ooh, this is kind of a big deal.
Oh yeah.
Tolvar, Dire Overlord. It is one red, green, legendary creature, human, werewolf, 3/3. So, like, here is, like, the werewolf commander that we have been asking for years. So let me actually read this. So it says, whenever a wolf or werewolf you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. And to be clear, that line of text is on both sides. So each side, it has this draw engine effect, which is great. So again, on the front side, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control three or more wolves and or werewolves, it becomes night. Then transform any number of human werewolves you control, daybound. And on, so like at the beginning of your turn, basically, you can, like, transform all of your shit, basically. So then it goes to Tolvar, the Midnight Scourge. Again, it still has that draw engine. It's a 4/4. And then it has, like, the Kessig Wolf Run pump effect, which is X, red, green, target wolf or werewolf you control gets +X/+O and gains trample until end of turn, nightbound. So it kind of just, like, really gets in that damage and most definitely guarantees that combat damage for the draw trigger. So it's like getting, it does everything that years and years ago people wished, like, the first werewolf commander did. Like, Ulrich just could not quite measure up. This is definitely, like, the werewolf commander that ever since I started playing back in 2015, people have been begging for years, and they finally delivered it. Thank you, WotC. And as far as I can tell, this is, like, the most popular commander from this whole set.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking on EDH Rec right now to, like, see, and it is 7 times more popular than the next most popular one, which is Old Stick Fingers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this one definitely delivers. I think a lot of people have been asking for this, and I know people were kind of upset that they didn't get a werewolf commander deck, like in the precons, because there are two that come with Midnight Hunt. But if you listen to, like, Gavin's video, there's just, like, a lot of logistical problems that come with doing something like that.
Right.
So I'm glad that,
in terms of, like, printing, yeah.
Yes, that's kind of the main issue. But I'm glad that, one, we did get one, and it is kind of like a vampire, a werewolf-centric commander. And then the other thing I'm happy about, and I don't know if other people have really thought about this, but it is a rare. It's not a mythic or anything, so it is going to be pretty easy to come across for everyone who's wanted one. It's not like going to be a chase card or anything, you know?
Yeah, you just mentioned Old Stick Fingers, and so I guess I'll read Old Stick Fingers. It is X black green legendary creature horror star. When you cast this spell, reveal cards for the top of your library until you reveal X creature cards. Put all creature cards revealed this way into your graveyard, then put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Old Stick Fingers' power and toughness are each equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. So first off, the name is great. Let's just appreciate that. This is very much a Golgari, like, fragile combo deck, and I've heard a lot of talk about this commander and, like, its combo potential and how it's basically like an Entomb effect, and I've heard people talk about Necrotic Ooze and balancing that out against, like, Ad Nauseam, and how those are kind of counterintuitive strategies based on CMC. And then more recently I've heard the idea of just including three creatures like Razaketh, Young Necromancer, and Witherbloom Apprentice, and like casting this for five, and then doing like a 8-step combo where like you win the game using those three creatures and reanimating them in various ways. Again, trying to like use that Witherbloom Apprentice that came out fairly recently in Strixhaven and kind of leads like Golgari combos, kind of. It's very fragile. It's very, very fragile and easy to disrupt. I don't know. There's a lot of, like, if you look at Golgari as a whole, there's a whole bunch of, like, fragile combo decks, and this is just, I think, another one of them. So, I don't know. If you like it, go for it. And you don't have to build it that way. I just, that's most of the dialogue I've been hearing around this.
I've heard very similar dialogue. I think people are really trying to push for this to be CEDH, but it is kind of like a...
Yeah, I don't think it quite makes it for CEDH threshold.
I think you're right, just because it seems very glass cannon-y. Like, if it doesn't work out the first time, I think you kind of get fucked.
Correct. Yeah, you just are you just are really fucked by, like, a single stacks piece.
Right, and you just want to try and get to, like... you just want to try to be able to get to be able to cast him?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want a bunch of other creatures or anything. You don't want a lot of the other black-green, I guess, essentials to CEDH that don't have to do with just getting you lots of mana.
Exactly.
Alright, so we have Katilda, Dawnheart Prime, green and a white, legendary creature, human warlock, protection from werewolves. I'm sure that'll become more relevant as we see more werewolf decks now. Yeah. Human creatures you control have tap, add one mana of any of this creature's colors. So you can then, like, tap for what I will assume will be green or white, if this is your commander, because that's the only ones you color cards you'll have. And then for four green-white, tap, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. This could definitely be another good 99 card for a lot of the human decks that we're seeing. Like, this could go into the Sigarda Champion of Light, especially because if you're putting a +1/+1 counter on stuff, then you're going to be able to help get the Coven ability to go off more often.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mentioned Kyler at the beginning, and this is just one of those commanders that could do human travel better than that one. So this is why we're talking about this one and not that one. Yeah, I like the werewolf, protection from werewolves. As you were saying, it's not really relevant in EDH, but the second ability of, like, turning all of your humans into mana dorks, you know, that turning your stuff into mana dorks is generally, like, pretty good, pretty powerful, and then that last ability of, like, putting +1/+1 counters on each of your creatures, that kind of reminds me of, like, another Selesnya commander, like Shalai, Voice of Plenty, and I've seen that in some decks, whether it's, like, the Commander 99, and you just get a fuck ton of mana, and you pump up your team and swing. So, like, it's, yeah, I think as a, I don't think it's going to be all that popular, but I totally can see it as the commander or in the 99, because it itself is a human. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We got Slowgurk Overslime, one green blue legendary creature, Ooze. So we got another Ooze, 3/3 trample. Whenever a land card is put into your graveyard from anywhere, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Remove 3 +1/+1 counters from it. Return it to its owner's hand so it can bounce itself. When Slowgirk leaves the battlefield, return up to 3 target lands from your graveyard to your hand. So that's a whole bunch of text. It's a little confusing, but basically, it's another Ooze Commander, so it's no longer just like Aave Progenitor Ooze. but more importantly, it sort of is like a Simic Lands Matter theme going on here. I've heard some like weird things you can do with this that involve like mind over matter to like do loops those lands in the graveyard. There's also like Walk Eons where you just take infinite turns. You know, there's the classic like Life of the Loam with those lands that are in the graveyard. This commander just does like really specific, strange things given how like it interacts with bouncing itself and returning lands itself to the hand and lands from your graveyard back. It does strange things. I don't think it's going to be all that popular, but it definitely is. It's kind of interesting. Like, I think I appreciate that, you know, over all these years, because, you know, you see all these Simic decks that are quote unquote like, oh, Simic does Simic things, like draw ramp, blah, blah, blah. So this kind of design, as a longtime player, I appreciate.
Yeah, this one doesn't make me like roll my eyes and be like, oh my god, it's another like just really good Simic values commander.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not Uro. It's not, what was that one from the Ravnica set? The Ooh, I mean, ironically, it was an Ooze Wizard. That was pretty much Birthing Pod, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, I know the art. It's like on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, it'll come to us eventually. We'll yell it in, like, our sleep or something.
Yeah.
Alright, we got Vadrik, Astral Archmage, 1 blue-red, legendary creature human wizard. If it's neither day...
Vanifar!
There you go. If it's neither day nor night, it becomes day as Vadrik, Astral Archmage, enters the battlefield. Instant and sorcery spells you cost X less to cast, where X is Vadrik's power. Whenever day becomes night, or night becomes day, put a +1/+1 counter on Vadrik. So this is interesting in the way that, like, if you want it to become night, you can't cast any spells, but you do want to cast spells because, you know, that matters a lot. He's telling you, like, you know, your spells are going to cost less. And then, I don't know, like, I guess, like, you probably don't cast spells on your turn, so you can, like, change it to be nighttime. And then you just have a lot of instants that you would then cast on other players' turns, which would then, make it so that it would become daytime later. So then you're just kind of, like, switching off a bunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, like, I didn't even really look at, like, the first or third line of text that relates to, like, the night and day affecting it. I really just kind of focused in on that middle line of text, which is, like, your instants and sorceries costing X less to cast, where X is its power. Because, like, it... You know, in some sense, it's sort of like Mizzix of the Magnus, where, like, you play a bunch of X spells, so, like, it's guaranteed to, like, no matter what his power is, like, you'll be able to cast them. But I've also seen some, like, CDH players, like, kind of talk about, like, this commander from of the whole set arguably has, like, the most potential to, like, be fringe CDH, given how well he interacts with, like, pump spells, kind of turning into, like, pseudo-ritual effects, because you pump up the power, and then, like, your instance sorceries could be, like, two less, three less, and, like, at that end of the format, that is a significant amount. You can do a lot of, like, is it Spellslinger stuff. So, I think this has, like, the most, from what I understand, this has the most potential to be, like, the most powerful commander from the set. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. All right. Next commander we got is Remcarlus, Stalwart Slayer. I had a real hard time with that name. 1 red-white, legendary creature, human knight, 2/3 with flying and haste. If a spell would deal damage to you or another permanent you control, prevent that damage. If a spell would deal damage to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, it deals that much damage +1 instead. So the wording on this is kind of funky. I've seen it other places before. It kind of reminds me of Tajik, Legion's Edge, another Boros commander. But the issue I have with that Tajik and Rem here is the fact that they don't prevent the damage to themselves. They prevent the damage to other things, which is really nice. But I'm kind of at the point where, like, I really want it to be able to prevent damage to itself. That's just me personally. I know other people don't mind and are willing to accept that he's not quite that powerful, but for me, it's like, eh, that's kind of the deal breaker. I know people have talked a lot about how it really synergizes with earthquake effects because Rem has flying, so Rem's going to avoid the whole suite of earthquake effects that exist in the game, so you're, in a sense, able to constantly board wipe and sort of create asymmetrical advantage that way, but I'm not, like, that's true, but I'm not quite sure there's enough there, like, especially with Boros' limitations, and they have improved over the years, but I'm not quite sure there's going to be quite enough to get there most games. I don't know. Prove me wrong. Build this. Play against me.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you want to slot this into Gisela?
No. I like to play good cards.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if, like, you know, this would just make some of your burn spells better, because, like, she doubles the damage, and so this would kind of pump it up a little.
I mean, yeah, like, if I have a bunch of incremental damage triggers that are, like, small incremental amounts of damage, Rem here does that much damage plus one, so it's adding additional, but, like, that's a pretty small amount, and, like, we are a multiplayer format, and our life totals are at 40 instead of 20, so it's just the scale at which this operates and that, like, my Gisela deck operates, it's not quite there.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. Alright, we got Ludovic, Necro Genius, blue black, legendary creature, human wizard. Whenever Ludovic enters the battlefield or attacks, mill a card. And then for X, blue, black, black, exile X creature cards from your graveyard, transform Ludovic, X can't be zero, activate only as a sorcery. So you have to exile at least one creature card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's five mana.
At least.
To transform it into Olog, Ludovic's Hubris, legendary creature zombie. As this creature transforms into Olog, it becomes a copy of a creature card exiled with it, except its name is Olog. Ludovic's Hubris, it's 4/4, and it's a legendary blue and black zombie. In addition to its other colors and types, put a number of +1/+1 counters on Olog equal to the number of creature cards exiled with it. So this is interesting, but correct me if I'm wrong, Blake, but you would not get any kind of, like, ETB effects from this, right? Just because it, as you transform, that's not getting, like, enter the battlefield. It just becomes a copy of that, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so it's a little tough. I guess, like, the route you would probably want to go in is trying to entomb or putting cards into your graveyard quickly so then that you can turn your commander into a copy of that, you know?
Yeah, it's basically becoming a copy of something you exile from your graveyard, which in theory is being enabled by the front side milling cards and, like, you know, blue and black mill spells. But in my mind, it's like there's already a commander that kind of does this and arguably better, which is, like, Lazav the Multifarious. That one arguably does, like, kind of the same thing that this one's doing. I mean, it doesn't have that mill effect. Yeah, so I just don't think it's, if you want, like, a less powerful Lazav the Multifarious, like, hey, here you go. It is kind of cool to see, like, another Ludovic card, because, like, I know originally, like, Ludovic was, like, one of the original partners back in the day. So it's kind of it's kind of cool to see him get a new card, I will say that. Definitely not as powerful.
He's fine.
And, you know, this sort of strategy, like, creating clones and, like, all these different, like, +1/+1 counters and, like, there's a lot of weird rulings, so if you are going to play this as the commander, please look up rulings, because there are some really weird ones.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, I think, is probably going to be one of the more popular, I don't think as popular as the Werewolf Commander, but pretty high up there. It was played on game nights, so the game night effect is going to kick in, I think, where this will probably be built more than it would otherwise. But it is Florian Voldaren Scion, buff, sexy vampire, as always. 1BR3/3 with first strike. At the beginning of your post-combat main phase, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the total amount of life your opponents lost this turn. Exile one of those cards and put the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. You may play the card, play the exiled card this turn. So basically what's happening here is, like, you want to do a bunch of damage, whether that's, like, with mass burn spells or whether it's going to combat or both. And then, like, you're just digging down into your library pretty deep, finding a card that you like, and then casting it. And so, like, in theory, like, you could do so much damage that you, like, are looking through your, like, library on every turn. So it's, like, almost like a demonic tutor. Like, that's if, like, the deck is running, like, really well, and, like, you're able to look at, like, your entire deck. But even if you're just looking at, like, I don't know, the top 10 cards at each turn, that seems pretty decent.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, Magical Christmas Land, you could peer into the abyss someone, because life loss would do the same as, like, the damage, so you could then pretty much look through, like, up to 30 to 40 cards and your library, which would be pretty nice. Just try and find one specific card. The way that Josh built it on game nights was definitely more interesting with, like, the dragon's approach.
So
if you want to go that route, he did pretty well.
It was very entertaining to watch. Very entertaining.
Yes, it was very entertaining. All right, we got this next one, and for everyone's kind of reference, this one is not found in the main set. And it is also not found in the commander decks. This one is only in, I believe, set boosters and collector boosters. That's the only way that you can find this one. So it's not technically standard legal.
That's kind of, can we just like acknowledge that, like, for like a little quick sec, how that's kind of annoying, where it's just like, again, it's kind of hard to keep track of products. Like, what do you mean it's not in, like, the commander decks? What do you mean it's not in the main set? Then where is it?
Yeah, and there are a couple other cards like that. I don't think we're talking about them because they weren't as relevant.
Right.
But it does seem like a thing WotC is planning to do on the future. So I will say, like, the downside to this, though, is it is a mythic card. So it might be hard to come across. And if it does, you know, become high in demand, there might not be as many. But let's just talk about this card, too. Alright, so Lind, Cheerful Tormentor. 1BR3/1 Legendary creature, human warlock. Death Touch. Whenever a curse is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, return it to the battlefield attached to you at the beginning of the next end step. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may attach a curse attached to you to one of your opponents. If you do, draw two cards. So this is the curse commander that a lot of people have kind of just been asking for.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of curses in these colors. You've got Curse of Misfortunes, Curse of Bloodletting, Curse of Opulence, to name a few of the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could go on and I could just name, like, every single curse, but I'm not going to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. I think this one is one of those commanders where it's very clear kind of strategy of, like, what you should be doing with the commander. Like, it's obvious that, like, you're going to build this curses. What you do with those curses, kind of up to you.
Yeah, I think you're spot on where, like, this is the curses commander that people have been asking for a number of years now. Up until this point, people have just kind of been fitting their curses deck with, like, whatever kind of mildly synergized with their curses. Like, people were, like, playing Gen as their commander, or, like, Mathas Fiendseeker. But this one very clearly is like, hey, play curses and I will reward you with, like, recurring them and giving you card advantage like this. And, of course, it's in, like, the best, like, three colors of where, like, some of the best curses are. Grixis, as you were saying, so this is fantastic. I'm very happy to see this card, and I imagine a lot of players are excited to play this.
Yeah.
All right, next up we got Lenore, Autumn Sovereign, 2GW, Legendary Creature, Human Noble, 0/4, with Coven. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target creature you control. Then if you control three or more creatures with different powers, draw a card. I almost put this at the beginning of the podcast where, like, there's just not much here. You know, it's a Selesnya deck that, like, pumps up your creatures with +1/+1 counters. Like, if you're gonna do, like, Selesnya +1/+1 counters in relation to, like, improving your creatures, just play, like, Hamaz, Guardian of Arashin, which is, like, that elephant that gives +1/+1 counters to your, like, gets +1/+1 counters, and, like, in relation to how many counters you have, makes your creatures cheaper, which is cheating mana cost is arguably much more powerful than what Lenore here is doing, so. Next.
I think just to kind of, like, go off of what you're saying, too, and just, you know, emphasize, like, how little there is to do, when you compare her to Wilhelt, the Rock Cleaver, who is the other face commander for the two commander decks, Lenore has 8 decks on EDH Rec. Wilhelt has 113. So already there is a lot more interest in this one, which is Wilhelt the Rock Cleaver. 2 black, blue, legendary creature, zombie warrior. Whenever another zombie you control dies, if it didn't have decayed, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token with decayed. At the beginning of your end step, you may sacrifice a zombie. If you do, draw a card. Alright, so we got a pretty decent zombie commander. We do have plenty of zombie commanders, but already. I think this one, though, pretty nice. What do you think, Blake?
I kind of have a lot of thoughts on this commander, so I'll try to be succinct here. So, this is another Dimir zombie tribal commander, which, I mean, we already have Grimgrin Corpseborn back in the day. He's definitely, like, lost popularity over the years as we've gotten these new options. I still think if you're going to do zombie tribal, like, your commander is usually still going to be Verena Lich Queen, because she gives you access to white, so you're now Esper zombies. Like, I think that's where most zombie tribal decks are focused usually these days, in Verena. Like, you can put Wilhelm in her, I think that's probably what's going to happen. And I do want to note, there are some, like, you can do a combo with, like, Wilhelt plus, like, 3 zombies, and, like, Poppet Factory, which is another card in this set, but I don't really want to take the time to go into the details, but it creates a combo where, like, you win the game, so that is a nice combo. That's typically how zombie tribal wins, either, like, just pure beatdown or, like, comboing, and this is another combo line. And then, again, I didn't want to take up more time in this site review. There was also a card called Tainted Adversary, which is a zombie card, and it does combo with Anointed Possession and Nim Deathmantle and Ashnod's Altar, cards that are already typically played in zombie tribal, especially, like, in Verena, because Anointed Possession is white. And so that's, again, another zombie combo line. So I think zombie tribal got a lot of support, just like human tribal did, and so did, like, werewolves. A lot of tribes in this set were really supported.
Yeah, and I think the one last thing, too, I know that on Innistrad there are a lot of zombies, but zombies show up almost every set, if not every set. So this card will only continue to kind of, like, gain in the support that it's going to get over the years, whereas I think some of these other commanders, like, we'll likely see cards that, you know, eventually can be slotted into them again. But Wilhelt just will probably always get, like, a new card or two that could potentially go into his deck. Like, anything that says zombie, like, is probably a consideration for Wilhelt.
Yeah. Alright. Well, Guy, we're almost an hour in, or over an hour in, so I think this will be the end of part one. Despite our best efforts, I think this is going to be a two-parter. So I'll give us a quick outro if you're okay with that.
Yep, go for it.
All right, so we are the Wizardy Staff Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. Make sure to leave a like and review. It actually really does help us out. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at WizardStaff101. You can send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate it. Peace out.
Peace.